Counsel are both appearing by video, I guess, on this case. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. I believe that the appellant is Mr. Handy. Please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Russell Handy. I represent Mr. Fernandez, and I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Okay. Keep an eye on the clock.
Thank you. Your Honor, in this case, we're appealing the award of attorney's fees to the defendant. Our basis for doing so is that the case was not frivolous or lacking foundation and therefore didn't meet the Christianberg standard for awarding fees to a prevailing defendant in an ADA case. The court's order granting fees is very short. It's a page and a half. And in that order, the court says that he finds that the judge found that the case lacked foundation, was frivolous, because in fact, the plaintiff never entered the store. We admitted that he never entered the store. The court said, you have to enter the store. If you don't enter the store, you have not personally encountered or obtained personal knowledge of the alleged accessibility barrier, thus failing to meet the basic threshold element of having standing to sue, end quote. That's at ER 3. We have a problem with that for a couple reasons. First of all, this court, the Ninth Circuit, has repeatedly held that, first of all, to have standing, you do not have to have a personal encounter. The Creek decision in 2017, the big one, held that you did not have to have a personal encounter. In that case, they never even went to the hotel. Those plaintiffs called and just found out that the shuttles were inaccessible. In numerous other cases, that was just one of a line of cases where if you have actual notice, if you've been given notice by experts, by third parties, or anyone, you can have standing to allege ADA cases.
Counsel, with respect, let's say you're right. There are some cases that suggest that under certain circumstances, physical presence is less important. But in this case, your client made an allegation which was a lie, and admittedly so. Didn't the court have the right to say, hey, this didn't happen to you. It was a lie. You've not been injured under Lujan. You have no standing. What's the matter with that?
But I think the problem is, and this is an argument we've had on scores of cases, where do you draw the line between personal encounter and deterrence? So our position is, as we said in our briefs, as the court pointed out, we admit that our client didn't enter the store, but he went to the store. And so this is a small furniture store right on Malibu Road, just feet from the public sidewalk that runs along it, with big full-length floor-to-ceiling glass windows. He went to the store. He saw that it was completely inaccessible. He has no path of travel in there, and he left, and he brings these claims. We allege that that's a personal encounter, right? It could be also framed as deterrence, and we've had this argument in parking lot cases. Our client pulls into the parking lot, does not attempt to park because there's no access aisle, and leaves. Is that deterrence or personal encounter? Or when they physically see that there's steps and no ramp, do they have to bang their wheelchair against the stair? At what point do we cross the line from personal encounter to deterrence? So we allege personal encounter. We think it's, in our minds, if you go to the site, it's a personal encounter.
Counsel, did you appeal the underlying decision by the district court that there was no standing in this case, or are you just appealing the fees award?
Just appealing the fees award, Your Honor. And so, again, I know it's quibbling about what's personal encounter and what's deterrence, but there's no finding that our client didn't go to the site. It's just they never entered the store, and the court found if you didn't enter the store, you don't have standing.
The court directed you to consider the argument that if there was no standing, then the court had no authority to award fees.
That is correct. And looking into it, I think there's an excellent argument for that. The Scaff versus Meridian.
What are you basing that argument on then?
Here, a quote, a court that lacks jurisdiction at the outset of a case lacks the authority to award attorney's fees, end quote. That's Scaff versus Meridian, 506 F3rd 832 at 837, Ninth Circuit Post Opinion 2007. And there's a line of those cases, the Kohler versus Bed Bath & Beyond case. Also found that
why isn't that your primary argument here, that the court found that it lacked that your client lacked standing to bring a claim? And so why isn't it your primary argument here that fees are inappropriate because the court does not have jurisdiction?
It should have been, and I'm making my argument now that the court's raised the issue. I think there is a jurisdictional question here that the court should address, and it should be a primary argument. And although I didn't draft the opening brief, I wish that it had found its way into the opening brief, but it should be a primary argument. It should be a threshold issue. This court said you don't even have standing, and that was basically the basis of its ruling. And if the court's going to find that there's not even standing to bring the case, then according to Ninth Circuit published opinion, there shouldn't be standing to award attorney's fees as well.
Counsel, by my lights, the strongest argument against your case is California Association of Physically Handicapped Inc. versus FCC. In that case, we found that the district court erred when it denied attorney fees under the Rehabilitation Act on the basis that it lacked jurisdiction. Why wouldn't that same reasoning apply here?
Unfortunately, I'm not familiar with that rehabilitation case, and I don't know if there's distinguishing factors between Title III of the Americans with Disabilities Act and Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act. So I don't have the ability to distinguish it as I sit here today, because I'm just not familiar with that case. I'm just citing to the cases out here that exist. Another one is Oliver versus In-N-Out Burgers. Quote, a court that dismisses an action for lack of jurisdiction due to standing does not have authority to award attorney's fees. Therefore, the court lacks authority to award In-N-Out attorney's fees under the ADA.
Let me ask you this. Doesn't 42 U.S.C. 12205 provide that the court can award prevailing fees in any action pursuant to the ADA?
It does, but the Supreme Court and this court in Brown versus Lucky Stores has said that even though they use the word prevailing party, for a prevailing defendant to be entitled to fees, it's a much higher standard in these civil rights cases. It has to be a case that lacks foundation, is frivolous, or lacks merit. And so there's no question that it's a much more difficult, and that's been reiterated by this court on just scores and scores of occasions. And so it's not just whoever wins gets their fees. Prevailing defendants have a much higher threshold. The court literally has to lack merit.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's assume for a minute that you're the district judge, and you find that the plaintiff's counsel lied. There's no basis for standing, and you feel that it's fees are appropriate. What should the court have done? Rule 11? Is that what should have happened here from your perspective?
If the court was going to think about issuing sanctions, it would have given us a chance to respond, and we would have explained.
Right, but I mean, would it be on the basis of a Rule 11 sanction?
Yeah, and we would have had the opportunity to brief the court and say, you're actually wrong, Your Honor. If you go to the site, right, that can constitute personal encounter, and you have standing. Even if we reframed it as a deterrence, I saw it, I actually viewed it, and was therefore deterred, and maybe that's different than encounter, like physically engage with. And so it would be unthinkable that there would be sanctions awarded in that situation.
But in this case, your client didn't say that. Your client lied, said something different.
He said, creating a new scenario here. Well, first of all, the court did not use that language, and I don't think it would have been appropriate. The court said, and I'm looking at the actual thing, says, plaintiff alleged in his complaint that he visited defendant's store. He now admits in his opposition that he never entered the store. And that was the distinction that the court made.
That your client then admitted, and the court noted, that he admitted that what he said before wasn't true. I refer to that as a lie. Isn't that correct?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor. We allege a personal encounter. We never allege in complaint he entered the store. We allege personal encounter, and we believe that.
Isn't that a reasonable reading of your complaint, though, counsel, that he'd entered the store? If you look at your complaint and read it, wasn't that a reasonable conclusion that you were saying that the plaintiff entered the store?
Certainly raises the question. I can see that. You say you have a personal encounter. What does that mean? Now, this is a personal encounter with inaccessible routes of travel. So how do you have a personal encounter? You have to stop short of them. You're not actually in those routes of path to travel. And we explained that in the briefing. And so, the court said, well, you never entered the store. You don't have standing. And I'm just saying that's...
Save any of your time? It's up to you, but you're well under a minute.
I do, Your Honor. I'll reserve the rest of my time if that's okay with the court.
Very well. All right, Ms. Dobson, please.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court. I wanted to point out that the court does actually address very similar to the facts in Bond versus Pulsar Video Productions at 50 Cal App 4th 918 that this case is based upon a lie, because in paragraphs 10 and 17 of the complaint, the plaintiff does allege that he visited our store and then he admits in his opposition brief to the motion for attorney's fees that he never actually entered the store. In the underlying motion for summary judgment, the court actually inquired on page 3 of the ruling. She says all that he needed to do was submit a declaration swearing under oath that he did, in fact, visit the store in November of 2020, and he did not do so. So under Bond versus Pulsar, the court ruled that, in effect, when the central premise of a claim was a lie, that attorney's fees can be awarded. And it's based upon 42 U.S.C. 12205 and under Rule 11. So in this case,
there weren't Rule 11 sanctions here, though, counsel, correct? The sanctions were imposed pursuant to the ADA. Isn't that accurate?
That is correct. You are correct that it is not Rule 11. It was, we're contending that it was under 12205.
But isn't there a case law in this circuit in dicta and SCAF and then in an unpublished opinion, Molsky, that when the court concludes that there's no standing and there's no jurisdiction, that means then they have no jurisdiction to award fees? That's the question we ask the parties to consider. And
yes,
how do you
Honor,
respond to that?
Under SCAF, I believe that the court in SCAF, that this is very similar to that case wherein the barrier in our case was not a permanent barrier. It was a temporary barrier, similar to the facts in SCAF, where a mere delay during the correction of a problem does not give a cognizable...
No, it's not. It doesn't have anything to do with the barrier. The question is jurisdictional. If you don't have jurisdiction because of lack of standing, then those courts suggest that that fees can't be awarded unless there's some independent source of jurisdiction to award fees. Could you now come back and make a Rule 11 sanction motion if we were to determine that the court impermissibly awarded fees under the ADA?
I believe that we could, based upon the court's reasoning that the allegation in the complaint indicated that he did visit the store, and then there was the admission later in the motion for attorney fee opposition that he never visited the store. So I think based upon that alone, that's similar to the Bond case that I pointed out, wherein the central premise of the case was a lie, and under 12205 we would, and Rule 11, we would be entitled to our attorney's fees.
But do you agree? I'm sorry.
No, that's
go
okay.
Ahead.
Go ahead.
Do you agree that there was no jurisdiction, the court having found no standing, there was no jurisdiction to award fees? Do you agree with that premise?
Your Honor, under, I do not. I believe that there was jurisdiction because of the case that I cited, Bond versus Pulsar Video Productions. I believe that the court did have jurisdiction because the court found that at the time that this case was filed, which is when standing is determined, that the court that this was filed without foundation, and it was filed frivolously because it was later determined that Mr. Langer had never actually visited our client's store.
Counsel, I don't think you're answering my colleague's question. Let me ask a slightly different aspect of the same thing. There's a case of Branson versus Knott that specifically says, and I'm quoting, where there is no subject matter jurisdiction to proceed with a substantive claim as a matter of law, that lack of jurisdiction bars an award of attorney fees. Isn't that your problem here, and what's your answer to that?
I hear what you're saying, Your Honor. My answer to that is under the case that is more similar to our case, the Bond versus Pulsar Video case, that because the central premise of this case was a lie, that the court did have jurisdiction to award attorney's fees.
Let me ask you a slightly different question, which is that your friend on the other side didn't raise this issue in his brief or an argument to this court. And so I'm curious to know your thoughts and your argument on whether or not we can decide this appeal on a lack of jurisdiction when it wasn't raised by the appellant.
Obviously, Your Honor, we believe that it should have been raised in the opening brief so that we would have had an opportunity to respond to it. But we do believe that the court did address in the ruling on the motion for attorney's fees, the basis for finding that this claim was brought without foundation from the start, which entitled our client to recover its fees. On page 2 of the order.
So what you're saying is that we can decide the jurisdictional issue, and you're urging us to find that the court had jurisdiction to award fees.
Yes, Your Honor. And that is based upon the central premise of the case, that upon the bond ruling, wherein the central premise of this claim was indeed a lie as admitted by the plaintiff.
You seem to be relying on the fact that they lied. Is that what gives us jurisdiction?
I think that the court, when the court made its ruling, one of the things that the court looked at was under the Christianberg standard, whether or not this matter was frivolous, unreasonable, or without foundation. And the court actually specifically ruled that based upon the lie, alleging that you did visit the store and then admitting later that you did not visit the store, that the claim was filed without foundation from the start.
You seem to be arguing the standing issue in the first place, whether the district court was correct. And let's just say all of us agree that that's not before us because it wasn't appealed. We're really talking just about the attorney fees. And the question is, since there was no standing and the district court awarded attorney fees after it determined it didn't have subject matter jurisdiction, do we have jurisdiction? That's the question before us. What's your best response to that?
I believe that the court does have jurisdiction under International Union of Petroleum Workers, Industrial Workers, 707 Fed 2nd 425, because we allege that the court's finding that the action was brought without foundation is the equivalent to the standard in International Union of Petroleum Industrial Works, wherein the court found that the action was frivolous and therefore could award attorney's fees based upon the fact that the matter was brought
merit. With respect, this is a circular. You're just going back and telling us why the district court found there was no standing in the first place. That's why he awarded attorney fees. He thought this was a frivolous case, it was a lie. But the question on appeal is, do we have jurisdiction to consider the attorney fees issue when there was no standing and the district court had found it had no subject matter jurisdiction? Our case law seems to say that we don't. And the cases that you're citing, at least to my lights, don't solve that problem. What am I missing?
I hear what you're saying, Your Honor, and we do believe that the court had jurisdiction under 42 U.S.C. 12205. We do believe that the court had jurisdiction because, in its discretion, it was able to award fees after finding that we were entitled to recover our fees and our non-taxable costs because of the central finding of the lower court that the action was brought without merit.
You have other argument?
I just wanted to distinguish this case from a case that was brought up by the appellant, which is the Langer versus Kaiser case, and we believe that this case is different from Langer versus Kaiser because in that case the court was talking about the tester status of the plaintiff and was talking about the serial filings of the plaintiff. And this case is very different because the plaintiff in the district court did not submit anything to the court regarding this issue of whether or not he had standing. In the opening brief, they point out that that it was well understood that the client had viewed the store from his vehicle, but the court points out that he did not submit a declaration indicating such, and by failing to do so was essentially indicating that he did not
Okay, your time has expired. Let me ask my colleagues whether either has additional questions.
No.
I think not, so thank you. So we'll now turn to Mr. Handy for rebuttal.
Just quickly, a couple points, Your Honor. First of all, I've looked up the Bond versus Pulsar Video Products case. It was brought in California court. They sought fees under Government Code Section 12965, Code of Civil Procedure 128.5. Does not involve standing in federal court, does not involve any of these things. I don't see any way to link these two. With respect to, it's true, we did not submit a declaration in opposition to the motion for summary judgment declaring that he, you know, this distinction between encounter and deterrence, but we had filed a Rule 56D application because it was so early in the case and we had outstanding discovery. We thought that would...
Let me ask you the same question that I asked your colleague on the other side, which is your failure to raise the jurisdictional issue at all, does that bar our ability as a court to decide this appeal on that basis now?
I don't think so. I think the court may even have an independent duty to assess jurisdiction at every stage in the case. I think I've grappled with, you know, cited those things before. I don't have the cite in front of me, but I think this court has a duty to look at jurisdiction always at every stage of the case. And so I don't think that's a waivable defect.
Very well. The time has expired. Do either of my colleagues have additional questions?
No, thank you.
Thanks to both counsel for your argument in this case, the case of Fernandez versus 23676 Malibu Road et al. Is submitted. And thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
I think I submitted this case, but just to be sure, Ibarra versus Garland is also submitted.